And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky back here on Move the Sticks. Breaking down a little wild weekend of playoff football. How you doing, Buck?
Man, I'm good. I'm good. You're the one that has been traveling all over the place. Man, you're freaking flyer
well,
stuff should be nice.
The good news is, after going to the Chargers game against Baltimore, is that this week it's a shorter trip to New England. So that'll be nice. Anyways, yeah, a lot of traveling. But I'm getting the good thing is, you know, for those who don't know, I do the radio for the Chargers, so I do the I fly with the team. And so they're comfortable aircraft, nice setup there. Buck, I watch college kids on the flights. Like, I'm getting a lot of, like, tape done. Oh, so yeah. It's been productive from that standpoint. You know, money. I just got to keep my own money, you know, trying to create conversation, be a distraction.
And he's just like, hey, get out the way.
We're trying to
I'm
work.
Working.
We're trying to
I'm
work.
Working.
Yeah. We don't all have that sweet, sweet radio money to fall back on. got to do some work. But this is our takeaway pod here, Buck. Are you ready? We got eight, right, Kent? We're just going to roll with our eight.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of do the winning team takeaways, and then we'll do the losing team takeaways as well.
Oh, that works.
All right. Want me to start us off here, Buck?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First one, Bosa and Ingram dominated.
Shotgun snap, looking middle of the field, under pressure. Ball is stripped. Chenna Nwosu diving for it. There is a scrum. It looks like the Chargers may have it. We'll see. Charger ball. Charger ball. The Bolts are going to win in Baltimore.
There he is, Matt Money Smith on the call right after that play. I mentioned Melvin Ingram. I don't know if you saw it, Buck. He chucked the ball into, like, the upper deck.
I saw it. It looked like a nice throw.
It was a nice ball.
Nice ball.
It was a very nice ball. anyways, what they did in this game, go back and watch the tape, they found something inside, really specifically the left guard, James Hurst.
Oh, you said it.
Waldo.
You said it.
And they went after him.
I felt like obviously you work for the team. Mm-hmm. I felt like you're like the cat. You're like the cat who ate the canary. Like, all week you've been sitting there like, hey, you know, maybe some extra DBs or whatever. And then I'm watching the game, and I'm sitting there like, ooh, oh, yeah. There's a lot of speed on the field.
Oh, yeah. Four safeties.
Four safeties. But not only the way they did it, they covered up the guards.
Mm-hmm.
They had Derwin James as like an outside linebacker. They had the two guys on the inside.
Rayshon in the parking lot.
and I'm sitting there like, whoa.
Yep.
And they were playing fast. And I think what happened, obviously, the best thing that happened, they got a little taste of it a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think not even about the scheme, the physicality.
Yeah.
And I think they turned it up. And I think that was the biggest surprise for Baltimore, because in that first game I felt like Baltimore kind of mashed them and kind of had their way and kind of moved them off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But in this game, the Chargers had no parts of that.
I was thinking of this from a political standpoint. I don't get into politics, but I hear this phrase mentioned all the time when they're getting ready to run for office, and they'll say, well, you know, we don't want to have he's just Bush light, or that's Clinton light. Like, go get somebody different. Don't just be a lesser version of this person. And I'm sitting there thinking from the Chargers standpoint, like, you're going to bang with these guys? Like, you don't want to bang with these guys. Forget that. No, we're going to put speed on the field. We're going to beat these guys to spots all over the place. We're not going to sit there and fight them. We're going to run around them.
And that's what they did. And I thought what was fascinating is how quick they got into gaps. They moved around. They were angling. They were stunned. You saw the athleticism of Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. But then, look, we talked about the dude all year. Derwin James is a monster.
He's awesome.
And he has been, I don't want to say the biggest piece, but he is the perfect player to play kind of that hybrid role. Mm. Each week he can be whatever you need him to be. And obviously we knew him personally before they drafted him. And so you kind of feel unfair because you want to give him a higher grade based on what you know about the person. But
if he's had a little bit more production, he would have been.
I mean
but he's got everything. And the other thing, Buck, it was talking to Gus the day before the game. He told me what they were getting ready to do here with this alignment. And, man, they're 195 pounds at one linebacker spot, 210 at the other with those two safeties in there. But he was telling me about Derwin. He goes, DJ, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, Gus Bradley's been coaching football a long time. He goes, if I'm in the game and he'll come off to the sideline, I go, Derwin, hey, when you see this, if you see this motion, if they do this, 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 and this. And he said, he doesn't ask a question. He just looks at me and I got it. And he said, you go out in the field and they'll run that motion and I'm sitting on the side going, son of a gun. Like, he picked it up just like that.
He is.
He's unbelievable.
But you know what's funny is I had my experience with him, obviously, when he was 17 years old. He came up to the opening. He was on my team. And I've never seen a five-star player cry after we lose a 7-on-7 thing of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that's how much it meant to him. But then we do the 360, and you talk to his defensive coordinator, and the D coordinator talks about he got hurt, but he is coaching on the sideline, and he is fully engaged. I mean, those are the guys that you absolutely want. And I think the one thing that we can learn from that as we think about the draft, man, go get guys that love it.
Yep.
That absolutely love it. Not the money, not all the other stuff, but they just love it and the game. And what I see when I look at Melvin Ingram, when I look at Joey Bosa, when I look at Derwin James, they love it. And it comes through when they play in the playoffs.
I was doing the post game down in the locker room, and I do Melvin Ingram and Buck. I go to interview him. You know, you do the radio thing too. So you get there, you stand next to him, you put the microphone up there. He's hugging me. He's like embracing me while we're doing the interview. He's a jovial, just a fun kid, man. And he is, man. So getting back to what I was saying, they put Bosa and Ingram inside on the guards. And the Ravens initially were doubling and chipping Chinonuosu coming off the edge and leaving their guards one-on-one with Ingram and Bosa. I'm like, you kind of get what you deserve when you do that. Then one time they try to make an adjustment, and they take Montgomery, who's in the backfield, and they try and drop him down in between the tight end and the – or in between the tackle and the guard. So Ingram is so dang instinctive. He sees him, spins inside of it, and gets a sack. I was like, that's big-time stuff.
Well, it's unbelievable. It is – I read an article in The Athletic where they also had a tell that one guard never pulled, but the other guard, like Marshall Yonda, never pulls, but James.
And then the parallel footwork with Ronnie Stanley as well.
They talked about that, and then they talked about if the tight end, they had two tight ends in the game, if the fullback tight end is right behind the regular tight end on the line, they always run the counter away from it, and they were all on it. And I was blown away, not necessarily by the Chargers discovering that, but that the Ravens didn't self-scout. They didn't know going into the game that here are our tendencies, because that's the assignment of somebody on the staff.
All right, we'll keep it rolling here because we're doing two takeaways in game. We're not running any sound with this one, I believe, right, with the second one, correct?
Correct.
All right, Kent. So the other one in this game, Lamar's still a work in progress, and we're going to get to Lamar in just a second. I know that's the headline here. But, Buck, going back, and I saw it live, and I'm wondering what's going on. Then I went and watched tape, and it was exactly as I thought. So the benefit, and you see this in high school football, the benefit of a mobile quarterback is the numbers game. You pick up an extra number. They kept running zone read with him instead of quarterback power, cornerback at counter. And I'm sitting up there. I'm like, look, I'm just calling the game here. But this is insane that they're trying to hold the Ingram and Bosa. They're trying to hold them instead of blocking them. They're trying to just to get them to read them. Why are you reading them? Go block him. You block him with the running back, you pick up an extra blocker and let Lamar go run. It was like you're just wasting a body. You've got a 240-pound back in Gus Edwards, and you're using him hoping that he's going to be a decoy to kind of pull these ends. They're like, forget him, go hit the quarterback.
What is fascinating to me, and like what was funny is because like you were obviously calling the game. But in the game, like the Twitterverse was saying, like, oh, you need to bench him and put Joe Flacco in. And I'm like, no, you can't take him out. Like the benefit of being a young quarterback is at some point he is going to have to play a playoff game. And the only way to get used to playing a playoff game is to play. But sometimes I feel like the Baltimore Ravens didn't watch him in college.
Yeah.
I feel like they didn't look at how he played at Louisville, and they didn't take what he did at Louisville or whatever. Because to be honest, when you looked at him in college, he didn't run zone read.
Yeah.
When he ran quarterback powers, quarterback counters.
Yep.
He scrambled, and then he threw
all of his yards run scrambles in this game.
Yes. So it's just baffling to me how they're trying.
They did
it
one time. His last run of the game was on a quarterback power, and he got 7 yards on like a third and one or two. That's the only time they used the benefit of the extra blocker with the running quarterback.
Yeah, they didn't take advantage of the plus one.
It was bizarre. It was baffling. And the other thing was, and we've talked about this before with Lamar, look, he is not refined as a passer.
He is what he is.
And, Buck, I'm telling you, and again, we saw it. We saw when we covered the pro day. We saw the comment. The misses are so bad. Buck, they're so bad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, then he scrambles around, chucks one up in the air, and you end up getting a play. But that, man, it's just hard to maintain a rhythm and consistency throwing the ball when you don't know what's going to happen.
No, you don't know. But the funny thing is, if we went back in April and we talked about, hey, give me your scouting report on Lamar Jackson. Hey, throws better inside the numbers.
Yep.
Don't throw anything outside. Anything to the sideline is bad. And I keep seeing him throwing outbreaking routes, and I'm like, he doesn't throw that stuff well.
But the interesting thing is that he got a couple of those on the Chargers the first game. And if you remember the pick in this game, Casey Hayward, they played inside leverage and said, we're not giving it. Popped it up in the air and it got picked off.
Yeah, they're taking away all your slants.
That's going to be the challenge for him going into next year.
That is a challenge for the Baltimore Ravens going next year is, okay, now he's your quarterback. You need to build the offense around what he does. And are Marty Morningwig and Greg Roman really able to think outside of – the read option stuff from the pros. Can they find a couple college programs to go to and figure out how to build an offense around them?
So I was talking to some guys in our personnel department with the Ravens beforehand, and you know, one of the ideas we were just kind of kicking around and talking about was you need to have they have RG3 there, which is great.
They need to have a coach on staff.
They need to continue to draft. Like, they're going to be able to get guys in the 6th, 7th round. Mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts.
Yep.
Jalen Hurts can play in this offense.
Yep.
So, like, guys like that, they're going to have to continue to have those guys because he is going to miss a couple games a year. He's going to miss 2 or 3 games a year. It's going to happen.
When you go all in
on
this, they will be the first team
that
it's an organizational decision that we want a mobile quarterback. So, the starter, the backup, the practice squad player will all be the same.
Yep. And the other thing, the other point, I wasn't talking about their personnel executive, but it was actually I was talking to Heap. You know, Todd Heap was there, and then Dennis Pitta, who called the game for the Ravens after the game. I said, you know, it'll be fascinating just to see I'm just looking at it from a personnel standpoint, building your roster. Personally, I believe they're going to have to draft 1 or 2 wide receivers every year, because if you're a veteran wide receiver that's on this team, you don't want to play in that offense. If you're a veteran wide receiver that's on the free agent market, you're not going to go sign with Baltimore to go block. They don't want to do that. Nope. You're going to have to continue to draft receivers on a yearly basis, keep that thing churning.
You're going to have to do that, and you're going to have to invest in the tight ends. The best thing that Baltimore did
for
the last 3-4 tight ends, make your tight ends your marquee guys. So if I'm them, I'm going to try and find the Zach Ertz types, the Dallas Goedert types, because even when we go those heavy tight end sets, one of those dudes may be split out to play like a wideout. So it'd be interesting to see how they build it.
All right, go ahead.
The Eagles have a quarterback dilemma.
4th and goal of the Chicago 2, an avalanche of noise descending down on Foles in the gun. 3-man rush, rolls out of the pocket, sidearm throw, caught, goal line, touchdown, Golden Tate! Got inside the hash mark, and Philadelphia has scored!
You know, DJ, look, I mean, we can sit here and talk about it, and we know that Carson Wentz is a better player. Carson Wentz is a franchise quarterback. But I think the debate that Philly will have to have, if Nick Foles continues to make this run, they will have to make a decision on winning quarterback versus franchise quarterback. Because for whatever reason, like sometimes – and I don't know if Doug Peterson just scales it down, and because it's simpler, it is better for their offense. But there's something about when Nick Foles plays for them that they kind of play on schedule, and it just looks different than Carson Wentz. Even though, to a man, everyone in the building, you and I will both say that Carson Wentz is a franchise quarterback. He's the guy that you want in the building each and every day. It is just an interesting phenomenon to see what Nick Foles is doing.
This is the first time in the Takeaway Podcast, because that's an interesting topic of conversation. I'm just going to slide this over to you, and I'll let you read it. I think we should take a break from the podcast real quick. What do you think there, Buck? What are you reading? What does it say?
Oh, my God.
I wanted to get a real-time reaction, and that's what we got right there.
What is it? Now I want to know what it is.
Go ahead, Buck. Read it.
The Green Bay Packers have hired Matt LaFleur as their head coach.
That is a young dude, man.
He's
so
a center.
Aaron Rodgers. How about that? How about that?
Oh, my God.
Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur. What do you think?
See, aren't we glad we did this in the afternoon?
Yeah, there you go.
We normally do this in the morning.
I get Bucky as Packer. Bucky's got the Packer blood here. I can get the real-time reaction. Give me Matt LaFleur to Packers, Buck. What do you think?
I mean, it's an unbelievable ascension up the ranks.
That's a young dude, man.
That's all I can say. And then, I mean,
it's good to be it's good to be in with Sean McVay. Have a connection to Sean McVay in the NFL right now.
It's good to be in that mix. But I will say this: there was nothing that I saw from the Tennessee Titans offense
that didn't fire you up, huh?
That fired me up. Nothing. There's nothing about that. Like, I understand LaFleur went from working in Atlanta with Matt Ryan to now working with Sean McVay with the Rams to then being the OC.
He was with the Redskins with McVay too, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's going to have to see how strong – we'll see how strong he is as a leader, because Aaron Rodgers, I didn't for the weak of heart here. Faint of heart? Is it weak of heart? I don't know.
Faint of heart.
There you go.
It's a fascinating phenomenon.
Yeah.
So this
young
is what
offense,
this is what we said.
This is the first domino. This is the first coach to go.
8 head coaching spots. Everyone is looking for the Sean McVay type, who's never won a playoff game yet. But Matt Nagy, everyone wants. But there's more to being the head coach than running the quarterback room and calling plays. And so we will see how this works out. But, man.
Interesting, right?
Big. Who is he bringing with him?
Who's going to be the DC? Because he needs his Wade Phillips. He needs his veteran. Or maybe they keep Mike Pettine, who did a decent job last year. He did a decent job last year. Who are they going to get? They got to go find somebody. He's got to go find his Wade Phillips, somebody with some experience. And I like the fact that at least Pettine's got head coaching experience. Wade Phillips had head coaching experience. So you're trying to get somebody that – you got to get somebody with some years under your belt.
Yeah, he has to get somebody.
Vic Fangio ain't available. So, I mean, you got to go find a defensive coordinator with a bunch of experience.
It's unbelievable.
Anyways, I want to get your real-time reaction there. Back to Foles. So here's my question for you, just looking at this situation. And feel free to laugh at this or treat it however you want. Other than age, what are the major differences between the Brady Bledsoe comparison here?
It's funny that you said that, because literally all day I've been thinking about, man, this is what Belichick had to decide with Tom Brady.
This guy's more talented. Bledsoe's more talented than Tom Brady.
And I promise you, like today I was working out and I was like, man, this is Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe.
Yep.
Like after a while you're like, man, we're winning, but geez, like how long and what are we in the business of? Are we in the business of collecting talent, or we're in the business of winning games?
Yeah, this guy moves the ball. We win games.
And so it is tough because you're so heavily invested in Carson Wentz being the dude. He's a guy. He's a great guy. He's
now the
everything.
Age difference would be a major difference between the Brady Bledsoe thing, because Brady was significantly younger than Bledsoe.
But these guys, like, he's 29. How old is Carson? 20.
Yeah, but flipped, right? So you have Foles that's older than.
Yeah,
than Carson.
Foles is 29. He'll be 30, and Wentz is 26, 27.
Wentz is 26.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you guys, because I'm curious about this, because I don't think that there's really a dilemma here.
You don't?
I think you go Wentz. My thing is, do you think, okay, 2 years from now, will Nick Foles be a starting quarterback in the NFL? And
in
will
this
Carson
system,
Wentz
but,
be a starting quarterback?
It's all tailored to this system.
It's funny because I don't like Foles outside of this system.
No.
But inside of this system, you can't deny that they move the ball.
Yeah.
And they do all these things. And he really uses –
You know who he reminds me of? I was trying to think of it the other day. But that throw that he made to Golden Tate over the middle, which is Buck, when he threw it, we did a thing in the aftermath today. He's on the right side of the hash. He throws the ball and it lands. He's throwing it straight and it just kind of drifts and lands about 4 yards on the other side of the hash. Right in there, he catches it, rainbow. He gets hit, but it was unbelievable catch and throw. I'm like, this is your guy. This is Jake Delhomme is what he looks like throwing the ball. That's what it looks like. And we would scratch our head, Buck. You were there. But I scratched my head. How are these guys winning with Jake Delhomme?
So that's actually a good thing, because I lived through the Jake DeLome roller coaster.
Yeah. DeLome won for everybody, but he worked in that system.
We went to Super Bowl 38.
Yep.
2 years later, we went to the championship game and lost to Seattle. He had like a 4 or 5 year run where you're like, man, and you're like, hold on to your seat.
Yeah.
But it worked for that squad for a while. But eventually, he comes back to the pack.
Yeah.
The thing about it is, we all talk about system quarterbacks and this and that. There's something about Doug Peterson and Nick Foles where they just kind of get it. And that touchdown throw that he threw on fourth down, that was an unbelievable throw, because Leonard Floyd is coming right at him.
His arm down.
He dropped his arm and still delivered it on the thing.
Which, by the way, tell me if you've ever been taught this, because it was so crafty to me when you watch it in the all-22 and slow it all the way down. I don't know.
Golden Tate looking inside.
Looking inside. As soon as he did, the DB immediately – as soon as he looked inside, boom, he was gone. And that was the separation.
So I at first was like, does Golden Tate not know what the play is?
Yeah, kind of look inside.
And then he took off, and I was like, did he not know what the play was?
It was the route running equivalent of your shoes untied.
Yes.
It is? What?
What?
Oh, there it goes. That's exactly what happened.
I just think it's a fascinating discussion from a team building exercise, because, all right, you spend so much to get your franchise quarterback. So you get him. He's successful. He's played at an MVP level. He has been hurt a couple of times.
Yeah.
You got the back, and no one knows how serious and significant the back injury is. But then when you just think about how bloodthirsty the league is for quarterbacks.
Oh, I need.
Like, what does he fetch on the open market? Does he bring? Can you get three? Can you get three ones back for him?
So this is so not cool, but I'm gonna do it anyways. I just found out in the last couple weeks about one team that tried to trade for a quarterback in the NFL and offered two ones and was shot down. So, and I'm just kind of looking at the skill sets of, and I'm thinking, easily get two ones for Carson.
Easy.
Plus.
Yes. You may get
man,
two.
I don't know. If
two.
That sounds crazy. Sounds crazy saying the guy was almost the MVP of the league.
Two plus a player.
Yeah.
Man, can you imagine what Jacksonville would give up to have a quarterback like that?
Yeah.
Can you imagine what that would bring back? Now, especially if you are a personnel department that fancies themselves in being able to draft and draft really well. To have that kind of currency.
It's crazy, man.
Because, see, the thing
at
about –
at some point in time, you can't – at some point in time, you can say you can't just keep saying he's more talented. At some point in time, you have to say they're winning with this dude. It's working.
Did
you can't
play,
argue. You
did
can't
he
argue.
Play that well yesterday, though? I think he was probably
no,
the second best quarterback
on
the field.
No, he didn't play. But I think what happens is when you start tallying up the Ws and the fact that, like, in playoff games, we have seen him play in playoff games and win games. And, look, if they go down to New Orleans, like, it just makes it increasingly difficult. But I still think –
he didn't play – first of all, Nick has never been comfortable and played well in cold weather. If you remember last year, they lucked out. The game where he went off was against the Vikings, and it wasn't that cold. I want to say the Falcons game where he did not play well
was cold.
Was cold. And then, obviously, you know, you get the Super Bowl, you're indoors. It's interesting.
I mean, they play in New Orleans indoors. They play in Atlanta indoors. I mean
– I don't know. They're not beating – I don't think they're going to beat the Saints, though. You know me, I pick the Eagles every week, but I don't think they're winning that one.
The only thing about this from a motivational standpoint, after the game immediately they're like, oh, they ran the score up on us.
Yeah.
And they also donned some ski masks and some other stuff. I mean, it's going to be a little chippy.
Yeah, it'll be fun. All right, give me your bonus takeaway there. We got to keep this thing rolling.
Oh, man, Trubisky's on his way. And the reason I say that he is on his way to finding out –
because he's a Tar Heel?
No, I mean, you know, like, I mean, he's fine. I won't say that I absolutely have a love affair with him, but I'll say this. He did some things that I didn't think he could do. Like, I had kind of teased some of the guys here that were Bears fans. I said, you know what your worst nightmare is? Your worst nightmare is a 2-minute drill, game on the line, and the ball is in number 10's
hands. Oh, I thought you were going to say the kicker.
No, they were like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
But look, he came out, he delivered some darts.
Hey, nice
and,
ball.
And look, he threw for over 300 yards. He is always going to be a guy that is prone to make some mistakes, but he threw the ball well. They did some things. But offensively, they are going to have to expand beyond the cute stuff. At some point, they're going to have to be able to play rock'em sock'em robot football and to be able to dominate them without the tricks and gadgets.
No doubt. All right, let's keep it rolling here. The Colts mix it up nicely on offense.
The running back offset to the left of Luck is Mack. Enters back to pass. He fires to the pylon on the left side. It is caught for the touchdown by Dontrell Inman.
So, going back and looking at it, Buck, I thought it was just a super creative job by Frank Reich in terms of mixing in some empty, getting everybody out, and then every now and then they'll just go max protection. They'll go 8-man protection and give all kinds of time. Dontrell Inman's able to hit a double move for a big play. They were able to get down the seam against a Tampa 2 and hit T.Y. Hilton on a huge one over the linebacker down the middle of the field. So, just creative play calling with the passing game and then the run game, it was just they just mauled him. I mean, it was I didn't think that Clowney played great, but man, Booger was killing him on the broadcast. Booger, it's like an SEC thing or something, man. Like a LSU South Carolina hate or something.
I mean,
he was crushing him.
He was absolutely crushing him.
He wasn't great, but he wasn't that bad.
No, he wasn't terrible. But you know, it's funny that you talk about the Indianapolis Colts and the way that they played. I think what they have done, and Chris Ballard obviously building the team out. Like he talked about wanting to be good in the trenches on both
four
sides of the
top
ball.
40 picks in their offensive line.
Do a great job. They control the line of scrimmage. Marlon Mack, who I had a draft crush on, has kind of become a nice number one back for them. But then they are making a point. You're not hitting our quarterback.
Nope.
When we're throwing the ball down the field, he's going to have 8 or 9 guys. It's like a fortress.
Yep.
You're not getting to them. They're going to take shots. When they open it out,
Andrew,
the ball is out quick.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just one of the best things that we talk about in the scouting business in terms of fit and scheme. They are making sure that they're scheming it up so Andrew Luck fits and is really working out well for them.
All right, and the bonus takeaway here, just the Texans. I know Will Fuller being hurt, but he's been hurt. At some point in time, you got to find somebody else you can rely on to be out there all the time.
It's not even that. But I hate their offense.
I know, it's tough.
I hate the way they play. I hate their offense. I don't think there's any symmetry to
stagnant
their running game. It's not exciting. Like, the fact that they scored all those points last year, I feel like they came back and didn't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, all that cute stuff that they did last year, they didn't do that. And I feel like they call plays.
They don't run an offense.
They don't run an offense. Yeah. It doesn't flow well together. And I'm going to say this. Deshaun Watson is going to have to be spectacular for this team
That's why I'm saying they need more dudes that can run after the catch.
They need
Peterson to help them out a little bit.
They need more dudes. They need a better offensive line, and they desperately need – like, I like Lamar Miller. They need – a dominant running back, someone that can command attention, make the game easy for the young quarterback.
I don't know. I'm not a big fan of horror movies, but when they announced the starting offensive line for the Houston Texans, that's about as gruesome as it gets.
It's ugly. Ugly.
Not great. All right, get us going to your final two here, Buck.
Cowboys, stick to the formula.
On third and long, Prescott runs it up the middle. 15, 10, 5, dive into the run. Oh, they spotted him short. They spotted him at the 4. Oh, they've moved it to the 1. It is a first and goal.
Hey, man, the Dallas Cowboys, what they do offensively is not cute. It's not sexy. It's not something that is must-see TV. But they figured out who they are. And when they stick to that formula, they win a lot of games. This offense is run through 21. Ezekiel Elliott is a bell cow. He's a dominant player. He is everything that we thought he would be coming out of Ohio State. He has added the pass-catching skills to his repertoire and has really been an impact player. Then they go and make a move to get Amari Cooper, number one receiver on the outside. In this game, he goes over 100. Ezekiel Elliott goes over 100. Dak Prescott makes timely throws. And the defense is as fast as we can see. They are fast and athletic, and it works well together. They can't win any style of game, but they certainly can win a style of game where if you let them control it, where they play Wisconsin basketball, play a little half court, take down the shot clock, they certainly can beat you in the fourth quarter. And Dak Prescott does just enough to win games, which is why I think he is the ideal quarterback for them.
So help me with this. Help me figure this out, because I'm trying to figure out why I love Dak Prescott. I'm trying to figure out what it is. There's a competitiveness that he has.
Oh, I think it's –
to me, even him just on the 3rd-and-14 run and just fighting for every inch.
Okay.
And I do the Charger game, so I see Rivers every week. There's a similar competitiveness in Prescott, and he's animated. Now, Rivers talks and is animated. Dak Prescott's animated too, man. I you can see why guys like to rally around him a little bit.
The only thing, you are around this guy that I'm going to say that he reminds me of. He reminds me of Steve McNair.
Yeah.
He reminds me of the toughness.
He puts it all out there.
The toughness and confidence exceed what the physical ability may be.
That's a good way to put it.
He's going to spray some balls. He's not going to be perfect. But he is a guy's guy. And there's something about when your quarterback is a tough dude,
yep,
people rally behind that. And when he went on that 3rd-and-14, he didn't look to slide.
No,
he didn't
look to fall. He was going.
And I think it's just something about, like, the guys just rally behind him. And I think that is why you hear Zeke Elliott talk about him being a grown man and all those other things. I think for them, he's the right guy. Now, when we fast forward to the offseason and when it's time to pay him, I think he has enough kind of self-understanding to know.
Yeah. I'm not going to be in the 30 range. We don't need to get, no,
right.
30.
But I think if he comes in at whatever it is, 20, 21, whatever it is, I think what the Cowboys will be able to do is, like, look, you get a lot of wins.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be our quarterback for a long time.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, I don't know the marketing world that well, but I'd imagine $4 or $5 million you might give up to stay as a quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, you can make that up real quick.
Oh, he's killing it. Like, he'll do it. But I think what is going to happen, because we've seen teams kind of go over the budget in terms of spending for quarterbacks, if he comes in at what we call, like, a middleman deal. Yeah,
Flacco money, what he's at right now. Whatever.
Right. Yeah. Comes in at that. They're able to build a team. I think you start seeing more teams being like, here's where you are. Here's where we kind of draw the line.
Yeah. I mean, see if some teams start approaching these guys early.
Yeah, you got to.
Saying, hey, you know, look, you 2 years away, you might be a $30 million guy, but we'll hit you right now. Let's just lock this thing in. We'll get you in.
And he is in a situation where he has to take it because I think he's making $700,000.
Yeah, fourth round pick.
Let me get that.
All right, what's your bonus one here?
The Seahawks need more playmakers. Having this debate or whatever on Twitter, everyone's upset.
You're debating everybody on Twitter right now.
It's just aggravating. It just gets on my nerves.
Yeah.
I tried to make a point. Then I got the PFF guys weighing in about running game and silly stuff.
And they
talk about, like, rushing attempts and what do you know and this and that. So then I'm just like, well, what do you propose they do?
Yeah.
Everyone goes silent. Yeah. Like, you want them to throw it every time. Like, what's the answer? Anyone who looked at the Seahawks, let's be honest, the Seahawks aren't like an A-level talent team. Like they
cover up their warts.
They cover up their warts because they run it and they lean on Russ, and they figured out last year they let him do everything and he got beat to a pulp. Yeah. So they can't play like that.
Well, here's I didn't even see that exchange, but here's my opinion on that, and tell me if this is what they're saying, what you're saying, or somewhere in the middle. I agree with how Seattle navigated the regular season. I think that's the only way they could have got to the postseason to play that way. Now, to me, when you get in a one-and-done tournament, like today I was using the thing, like I felt like I was watching Braveheart, and he kept saying, hold, hold, and I'm like, okay, like when are we going to charge? Like this is the postseason. Yeah, let's go. Like cut him loose now. Like we saved him. We preserved him. Now it's one and done. Got to go home. I mean, Phillip Rivers diving for first downs. Dak Prescott going head over.
I thought you
don't have to be reckless, but you can be a little bit careless. Like,
well, I think the bigger thing with the Seahawks, and it would be funny to see how many offensive plays they had. I feel like Dallas was really controlling. Like, Dallas was making you play at our tempo. We're going to control it, whatever. The thing that you can do with Russ, obviously, is you can come out and throw early. Mm-hmm. You can play pass. But I think the issue that some people don't recognize, that offensive line is okay. But they cannot block the Cowboys when the Cowboys know that they're passing. I think some of that is, hey, the game is tight. It's 14-10 in third, fourth quarter. We're right where we need to be.
Yeah.
If we get it to the fourth quarter, our quarterback is better than yours. Let's make a play. But in third and 14 – they didn't make a play.
You know, that I know the distance was longer, but, man, when they showed Pete Carroll on the sideline, all I could think of was Vince Young. He took off and run. Had the same look on his face, like, oh, man. Had him dead to rights.
Bobby Wagner missed a tackle. And he's
good as it gets. One of the best. Hall of Famer.
He missed a tackle that would have made them kick a field goal. They would have been within six, and then they would have had an opportunity. But understand, they need more firepower on offense. They need a tight end. And even though they had Jimmy Graham, they need someone in the middle of the field, because if you're going to run it, the easiest guy to hit off those play-action passes, the tight end hooking up right over the middle.
Yeah, there you go.
And you asked how many plays. The Seahawks had 52. The Cowboys had 68. So a lot more plays for Dallas.
Yeah, 52 is not enough plays.
Anything you want to pile on at the end of this thing, Buck?
No, but I think when we have our podcast, our next podcast, when we're talking about the college stuff after the championship game, I can't wait to kind of dig in a little bit on Dwayne Haskins now that he is officially made his way out.
He got better as the year went on. I'll give him credit for that. Well, that's another topic for another day. I just wish he moved around a little bit better.
What? I thought everybody wants a pocket passer.
Look at all the young quarterbacks right now. You got to be able to move around a little bit. I don't want him to run around, but he's got like Josh Rosen type athleticism.
That's not his thing.
I know. He throws the heck out of it. I just wish he could get away every now and then. I think he's the best one. We'll have plenty of time to get into that. Oh, Buck, where do you see I'm working on my top 50.
Oh, man, don't start. I don't want to jump
into it. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but just because the way I do it, I put it all in as I go in by grade. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you can move the list around. Nobody's going to see my grades, but I can kind of say, okay, well, this position I might take a 6'3 tackle over a 6'5 guard, you know, whatever, just kind of move it around. But I'm going through my list, and I'm looking at him. I'm like, oh, my gosh, my grade in that little receiver from Oklahoma is so dang high, man. People are going to laugh me out of the room. They're going to be like, whoa, DJ, what are you – dude, I put a big grade on
You know
that,
what happens?
Dude. Big grade.
This is what happens, because you looked at all the notable names early, and all the notable names are meat and potatoes guys, linemen,
Hollywood,
pass rushers,
Hollywood.
Stuff like that.
Wood.
So the first time you had an opportunity to see somebody put the ball in the paint, you're like, oh, yes, that's what happened. That's what happens. You've been on the road for a week. You've been looking at all offensive and defensive linemen. You finally show up at a school that has a playmaker.
You know what happened?
And you went crazy.
You know what happened? I saw the Kansas City Chiefs play twice this year. I said, ooh, I like to get one of those. Now, he's not as thick as Tyreek Hill. But, Buck, he is –
No, you don't have to tell me.
He is so – like, God bless him. I hope he has a great career. He is so much better than John Ross. It ain't even close.
He has some route running
and all everything else.
He has some get down. It's unfortunate that when we watched him in the semifinals.
He was hurt. He didn't play.
He was hurt.
Yeah.
He didn't. He couldn't do it.
The funny thing is, he dropped some balls in that game. I watched every target this year. He's got unbelievable hands.
I don't worry
about his hands. But anyways, we'll have time to get into all that stuff. But yeah, man, not a very big receiver carrying a big grade. To the point where I looked at it, I was like, I'm gonna drop that down.
Who do you have in the championship game?
Alabama. I win the whole thing if Alabama wins.
Yeah, otherwise it's Solly and I co-champs.
Do you believe in that, or are you just taking that because you think?
No, I'm never going to bet against Saban in a championship game, but I don't feel great about it.
You don't feel great?
No. But I don't know. Alabama, I We'll see which one of those, if that bat comes out. But
are they going to have like 12 guys drafted this year, I think, is what's being reported.
The senior's a good player. The underclassman's really good. I know everybody talks about Najee Harris because he's the
– Josh Jacobs.
That's the dude.
Yeah, he's really good.
That is the dude.
They're never hurting for running backs.
No. All right, let's get out of here. All right, that's going to do it for us. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Daniel Jeremiah. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for subscribing, leaving us those little reviews there on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate that. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.